Hi, and welcome to the Well-Read Podcast, a bi-weekly discussion of books and reading. I'm Anne.
And I'm Hallie.
And we are librarians with the Beaufort County Library in South Carolina. This week, we'll be doing something a little bit different. We are going to talk about Hallie's reading life. So the idea for this podcast came from the Book Riot podcast, which is called Reading Lives. So we basically stole their idea.
Yes. Thank you to the Book Riot and Jeff O'Neill, who is the host of that. If you're not familiar, it's weekly or bi-weekly.
I'm not sure how often,
but he brings people on the podcast who are book related in some way. So there are authors and there are people that work in publishing, people from Book Riot that he's had on, and he goes and asks them questions about their lives growing up and now as adults, what their reading lives look like. And it's really, really interesting, I think.
Yeah, so it's kind of, it's super addictive. Mm-hmm. And you start into it sort of being like, oh yeah, you'll hear a couple of fun books, but then it's riveting.
Yes,
it's so interesting to hear how people became the readers they are today. So
And a lot of themes run through of like similar childhood experiences and stuff. So it's fun. So we thought we would take a crack at it and we're going to do me today and then we'll do Anne on a different episode. And so let's get going.
Okay. So Hallie, were you a reader as a kid?
I was a reader as a kid.
Imagine that.
I know. I was a big reader. I was somebody who I could read and block out everything going on around me, which was great. So I could sit and if there was, you know, I have two sisters and if there were noise from the TV or, you know, talking or anything like that, I could just completely block it out and sit and read. And I love to read all sorts of different things, but I was a big rereader as a kid. So if I found something that I liked, I had a tendency to want to read it over and over again, which I don't know if that's a common trait in kids or not, but I think it is because I think about kids I know who watch the same TV shows over and over again. Right. So I think that's the same impulse there is to you find something you like and you want the experience over and over.
Right. And you're kind of unaware of how much more there is.
Right.
Out
right.
There. And yes, so you latch onto that.
Right.
Yeah. So what kind of stuff did you like to read?
I liked, when I was younger, you know, in elementary school, I really liked the Beverly Cleary books and Judy Blume and sort of the classic kids books. I loved The Westing Game. Did you ever read that?
That's the Inheritance.
Yes, one. There's a mystery.
But I read it as an adult.
Did you?
Okay, I wish I had read it as a kid because I would have loved it.
I loved that book. Yeah. That was one I know I read over and over and over again because there's kind of like a twist at the end.
It
all comes together. There's a man who offers an inheritance to this group of people that live in an apartment building, I think. It's like different. It's sort of like the Amazing Race almost or something that they have clues that they have to solve and then they figure out this mystery. And I just loved it. I just couldn't get enough of it. And then I was a big Babysitter's Club fan.
Yes.
And I have, like I said, I have two older sisters. And so I was reading Sweet Valley High books because my older sister was reading those and I loved those. I read a ton of those. And Sweet Valley Twins I read. So
what are the difference between High and Twins?
Okay. I think Sweet Valley High was the first that came out and they were in high school. They were 16 years old, twins, blonde hair, blue eyes, perfect California girls. And then I think they spun off that to Twins, which was when they were in middle school. So it was sort of like a prequel, but came out I think after Sweet Valley High became a thing. And there were like these special editions that were extra thick and I just loved it. And that was a big thing when I was little, like not little but like once I got to about middle school, I really liked the thickest book I could find. Like to me that signified that I was a more mature reader or something, like the thicker. And in fact, once I got to middle school, I started reading more adult things that I would read. I remember Mary Higgins Clark books because they seemed really big and thick. I read the V.C. Andrews books, The Flowers in the Attic, in eighth grade. So I hear stories about people who read like the classics, you know, they were introduced. That was not me at all. I was reading completely what you could find pretty much at like a grocery store.
So what did your parents think of this? Did they know you were reading V.C. Andrews?
I don't know if they knew I was reading V.C. Andrews. They were big supporters of me reading. They never really limited what I could read.
Right.
Probably they did when I was younger, but from my memory, they didn't really limit. And they just, anything I wanted to read, I could read. And part of that, again, because I'm the youngest, I think that has something to do with it. The books that were in the house I was reading, and maybe they were beyond my age level, but they were there. And so I would just pick them up and read them.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were okay with it. Maybe they didn't know what was in V.C. Andrews.
This looks like a charming tale.
Nice family story.
So you never had your parents ban anything from the house?
I don't think so. Nothing. No, my parents are really like that. I don't recall them ever saying anything that was not appropriate or anything. Mm-hmm. I really don't think they ever did, which I'm thankful for, because I think that I probably sort of self-selected anything that seemed maybe too advanced for me, or maybe I would have tried to pull something off the shelf at the library or at home and try to start reading it, and it probably went just over my head if there was stuff that wasn't appropriate. So I probably just wasn't interested and just stopped reading.
Yeah.
So
that works well for parenting.
Yeah. Good sort of laissez-faire.
Yes.
Parenting.
So did you read, so it sounds like you were reading anything that sort of fell in your lap. So, so definitely out of your age level.
Yeah, probably a little bit.
Do you think that you skipped anything that you should have read at a certain age that you didn't get to because you were reading above your age level?
I don't know. I know that when I switched from a public school system when I was growing up through eighth grade, and then I switched to private all-girls high school freshman year. Or it was a private school for kindergarten through 12th grade, but I just went there for high school. And so when I switched and went there, I felt like they had read a lot of books that I had not read in school. And so I remember in English classes there being references to things that they had in their curriculum that I had never read and subsequently have never read because, I mean, I've tried to fill in some of the holes, but it was just like I missed that middle section.
Right.
I remember Lord of the Flies was one that they had read that I, because they'd already read it by the time I got to high school.
Yeah.
Of course, they weren't going to redo it in the curriculum. And so it wasn't until I was in my probably mid or late 20s that I finally read that book because I had just missed it sort of on the syllabus of English classes.
Yeah.
So those are that's sort of what sticks out. I can't think of any children's books or young adult books that I would have skipped because I was reading ahead. Although The Giver is one I never read until I was an adult, which probably would fall into that category because I think it had come out around the time that I was, I would have been of the age to read that. But then I'd probably skipped on to adult books. But that's really all I can think of. More school related books than anything else like that.
Yeah.
It feels weird not to be asking you. Like.
I know.
What did you read?
I keep wanting to say,
but we'll get
and
to
I
that.
Did this, but...
We will get to
you. Yeah. Less of a conversation, more of an interview.
Yeah.
So when you got to high school, did you like the curriculum that you read?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that was really my first exposure to a lot of the classics that I remember in middle school. We revolved more around, what's the I Am the Cheese book,
Robert Cormier.
Yeah. Books like that were geared towards that age group, but I don't know that they would be considered classics. And then when I got to high school, I was reading like Mark Twain and Jane Austen and true classics. And so I just remember being pleasantly surprised that I was enjoying those, particularly like the British 19th century, 18th century British literature. I really enjoyed the stories and the language, which I thought would be sort of impenetrable, was... Once you got into it, it sort of made sense. And I remember really being pleasantly surprised that I liked those so much. And then in my senior year, I took a modern American literature or modern literature, not American, modern literature class. And remember reading The Handmaid's Tale is the one that sticks out that I was like kind of blown away by it because it was such a good story and it was considered literature.
Yeah,
and, you know, I was being taught this book that I probably would have picked up on my own. So I definitely enjoy the curriculum. I'm sure there are books that I wasn't as much of a fan of in high school, but overall, I would say that it was a good eye-opening experience that I was reading some things that I'd sort of always heard about or heard, again, my sisters talk about in their school. I thought, oh, gosh, these sound awful because they just sounded so hard. It sounded like it was taking away the pleasure of reading and just making it schoolwork. And so I was pleasantly surprised that they were actually kind of fun to read and it was a fun thing to be doing in school.
Well, you always hear people say, kids talk about how much they hate reading these books in English class and how it's just this drag, and then you get to them, you're all, oh, there's a reason that these are famous and these are popular and they have all kinds of insights and they have plots that are exciting and they're I could never understand why people hated reading in school, but
we're readers.
Yeah. So what did you read on your own when you were in high school, and maybe college too?
I read a lot of like James Patterson and bestsellers. You know, at the time, I'm going to date myself here. The internet wasn't really a thing when I was in high school. I mean, it existed, but it wasn't the thing that it is now. And so book discovery was me walking into a bookstore and looking at what was available. And, you know, now in hindsight, you know that there's a reason books are placed at the front of the bookstore or on the tables that you're going to notice. But that was what drew my attention. So I was reading a lot of whatever was on the bestseller list, what was popular, what was available easily. So that's a lot of what I read. I had a good friend who was a big reader also, and so she would recommend books to me. I remember she gave me The Sun Also Rises as a graduation present, and that was the first time I had read that. I read a lot of mysteries at the time, I think. I'm trying to remember. There was, I wasn't drawn to like literary fiction at all. I don't remember. So it was like popular mainstream books and romances, of course. You knew was coming.
We'll get to that in a minute. Were you an English major in college?
I was not. I was an English minor. Okay. I was a psychology major and an English minor.
Interesting.
And so I didn't read that much for pleasure in college because I was doing so much reading for school.
Well,
reading should be in quotes. It should be in air quotes because there were definitely books that I did not read that I would be tested on and write papers on because there was just so much reading in college. It was just sort of hard to keep up with it. But I did. I would still read on school breaks and in summers and stuff. And I would do, again, like what was in the bookstores that I could find a lot. I think that was about the time Oprah's Book Club was becoming a big thing. And so I remember reading some books that she was had her little stamp of approval on the front, which are some of them are really good books. I think they get kind of a bad rap, but there were a lot of really good books. And so I was reading a lot of the classics and stuff in college. And then on my breaks, I would try to read some of the stuff that was more fun. Like that's Bridget Jones's Diary. I remember came out when I was in college. I remember reading that and like sitting on my dorm room bed and having schoolwork to do, but instead reading that, which was pretty unusual. Usually that was not the stuff that I was reading during a semester. It was on break. So
did you have any college classes that you remember being really influential in your reading in your English classes?
I took a Shakespeare course with a professor who was really, he had this lovely melodic voice. He was Iranian and he had this nice accent and just a very kind of deep voice. And so he would read these passages in Shakespeare and it was just so soothing to listen to him. And it would sort of draw you into the world. He just had a manner of doing it. And so that really opened up that Shakespeare world to me that I had, we had definitely done Shakespeare when I was in high school, but this was the first time that it was all, you know, however many weeks, 16 weeks focused on just Shakespeare for that whole time. And I really saw the entertainment value of it and the enjoyment value of it instead of, that was definitely one in high school looking back though. That was kind of a drag for me as a student trying to get through Shakespeare, but college really opened my eyes that he was really entertaining and funny in some of his plays. And so that was one that I, that was a course I really liked. And then I remember in another course doing, Thousand Acres by Jane Smiley.
Oh yeah.
And that was a book that I remember really appreciating and thinking was a great book. And then I did we had a modern American literature class that we did Gravity's Rainbow by Thomas Pynchon, which I read about three pages of and thought, I have no idea what this book is about. I have no idea what he's talking about. These words are in a sentence, but it is not making sense in my brain. And then, so that was it. I've never gone back to Thomas Pynchon. I never read the book in the class. I just was like, I was not smart enough for it. Like, it just didn't make any sense to me. But we did read Saul Bellow's Henderson the Rain King in there, and I remember really liking that. And the whole time I was reading it, singing the song in my head by the Counting Crows, The Rain King. I don't know if you know it.
I don't think I know that song.
Yeah. And so I kept thinking to myself, like, I should really write a paper about how the song relates. But I was like, they obviously don't relate. And then after we had finished with it, the professor said something about it. I'm always wanting a student to write a paper about how the song relates to the book. And I was like, oh,
you
darn it. I could
have
been the star student. Oh. Which I definitely was not in that class again. Let's go back to Thomas Pynchon. Like, I didn't get it. So so that stands out.
You would have redeemed yourself completely.
I totally would have redeemed myself. But I definitely took a lot of the British literature classes because that was what attracted me, those stories, those sort of big, thick books that had these elaborate stories. And that was, when I was introduced to the books, like Middle March and Bleak House. And at the time, again, I would read, you know, parts of it and then try to cobble together a paper, which is terrible. But that's what, and then those are books that I went back to after I was out of school and really appreciated. But it was introduced to me in college, I appreciated.
That's just college. You just read parts of it and then you get your paper done and move on to the next thing. So have any of those books from high school or college really stuck with you, or you revisit them? Or
some of those British. I've done Middlemarch more than once, and I've done Jane Austen multiple times. Right. I've done Jane Eyre multiple times. Those definitely have stuck with me. I'm sure there are times where I'll sort of start Googling college syllabi to see what on them, what students are reading, just to challenge myself, like, how many of these have I read at this point? You know, could I go through and read all of these, which I never make it through. But it's sort of fun to look and see what I've read and what I've liked. And it's so different to read something for enjoyment and entertainment versus reading it for critical thinking and to write a paper about it or to talk about in class. And so I've enjoyed them a lot more as an adult than I did as a student.
Yeah.
Even the ones that I liked as a student, it was still through the lens of I have to really look at this and be able to write a coherent statement about it.
Yeah, and there's the sense of responsibility that
It's sort of the same way I read now for a book club. I read a book that I'm going to be discussing in our book club very differently than I read just a book on my own.
Right. Did you ever this is what I did in college. I would go to buy my books for my classes and I would look at all the other books that were in the bookstore for other courses and think, oh, I wonder what that class is. And then I'd go sign up for it if it looked really fun. Did you ever do stuff like that?
Yeah, I did. And I would always, I loved seeing that stack of novels or the books sitting on my shelf just waiting to be read. The promise, the potential that was there. And I always had such good intentions of reading them all, but it never really
happened.
That's
sort of the back to school feeling.
Like we talked about last time. Yeah. That feeling of that, all that possibility right there on a shelf. I used to love
And then
that.
By week two, you just want to throw them all.
Like, no, not going to happen. I'm definitely not going to read Pamela. Oh, that was one. Oh, did you ever read that book, Pamela?
No.
Oh, I hated that book. That was one I read from start to finish.
Big book,
too. I was ready to throw it across the room by the end because I just really did not like that book. In fact, that should be one I should go back to because I've never picked it up since then. Uh-huh. But I really did not like that book. Really, really, really.
So you talk about romance novels a lot.
Yes.
On this podcast. Yes. So how did you get into reading romance novels?
I started reading them when I was in high school. I remember there was a girl who was in, I think, my biology or chemistry class. And she came in and she had a book called Knight in Shining Armor by Jude Devereaux. And she was like, you've got to read this book. It is the best book. And I wasn't even that good of friends with her. I think she was just really a fan of the book. And she was in the middle of reading it. So she's telling everybody. But I was about to go on spring break. And I thought, well, I need some books for spring break. So I took that one. And then a couple of other books that she had recommended by Judith McNaught. And they're these just all, like, you feel totally immersed in the story when you're reading romance novels. So that was sort of my start. I just loved the feeling of, like, it was a page turner. It was totally absorbed. It was a feeling, honestly, that I probably hadn't had since I was a child, like becoming totally in the world.
Wow.
And then suddenly I was reading these books that I just couldn't wait to find out what happened next and was really involved in what was happening in the story. And then I wasn't a solely romance reader by any means. I was still reading lots of other things. Then I went away to college and didn't really read them except when we would go on spring break with my friends. I had a friend. We would always take the trashiest romance novel we could find with us and read portions of it out loud on the beach. But that wasn't really reading from, you know, that wasn't the same thing.
Right.
So then that was it. It was really just high school. And then when I read some Nora Roberts, again, because she was always featured at the front of bookstores, so that she would sort of pop up on my radar. But then it was when I was in graduate school, and one of the other students in the program was a huge supporter of romance novels and would make a really strong argument for why they should be respected as a genre and how they were so looked down. And I was looking down on them. I mean, I really was sort of like, whatever, romance. And she now has actually become a romance author, which is really cool.
Awesome.
I know, it's very cool. I love seeing her name pop up. But she would give these statistics about how much money is spent on romance novels a year, how it's like this huge portion of the book publishing industry is romance readers are supporting the industry. And yeah. So she just made a really good argument. Like, it should be respected. Even if you don't like it, even if you don't want to read it, at least respect the fact that it's a genre that's worth thinking about. So that was, I think maybe I read a romance book when I was in a reader's advisory class there, but it didn't really spark my imagination. And then was when I became a librarian and I was trying a few years ago to read more widely of what people were asking for in the library and not just sticking with what sounded interesting to me. And so I decided to go back to the ones I had read in high school because I knew I had liked those. Mm-hmm. And they're a little bit problematic. There was a thing like in the 80s and 90s with romance novels, a sense of like the woman had to be kind of meek and almost forced into some of these situations. And then that was the only way she could, if she was too aggressive about her interest in a man, it reflected badly on her. So she almost had to be forced into the situation. Right. And then once she was forced into it, she could enjoy it, but she couldn't initiate anything. So there are some like sort of, you know, power dynamic things that are problematic in these books, but they were still just as interesting. Like I was reading them a few years ago, like I was still totally involved in the story. And so that sparked my interest again. And that was probably just like three or four years ago that I really sort of got back into it and was like, there is something about these. They're total escapist reading for me. And sometimes you just need something that you know is going to have a happy ending. There are times in my life that I think I don't want to read another sad, depressing story. I'm getting enough of that from the news or in real life. And I just want something that you know how it's going to turn out. And it's not about being predictable in that way. It's just you enjoy getting to know the characters and through the story. And so I started looking around and there are some great websites for romance readers and with romance reviews and recommendations of what to read. And so that's really how I got back into it. It's not that long. And I still go through phases where I'll read a lot of them and then sort of fall out of it and read other things and kind of read a lot of them. They're good vacation reading. They're great summer reading. So that's my romance story.
You have inspired me to read some more romance.
I will give you some to read.
Okay. So did you always want to be a librarian or was that something that came later in life?
I did not always want to be a librarian. I always loved the library. I loved when I was a little kid going to the library and stuff and would always take home stacks of books. But it wasn't until I was out of college and it would have been a few years that I'd been out and I was sort of adrift a little bit. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I was working in a job I wasn't really happy with and I was fine on a day-to-day basis, but when I look ahead, I would think this isn't what I want my career to be, really. You know, it wasn't, I couldn't see a long-lasting future there. And so it had sort of popped in and out of my mind that a librarian might be something I would want to do. But at the time, I kept thinking, well, I can't really afford to go back to grad school. And it just seems kind of insurmountable of a prospect to change my life to do it. And then one weekend, I was visiting my aunt and uncle, and there was a book festival in Chicago that I think still exists. And my aunt had been a career librarian in academic libraries. And so I was there and we were just talking about, you know, books and reading and how I organize my reading life. And she looked at me, she's like, you really should be a librarian. And that sort of was just all I needed to hear to think maybe I should be a librarian. This is coming from somebody who knows what it's like to be a librarian. She had done it for many years. And if she's saying I should be a librarian, maybe I should look into it. And so then it was just kind of gradual. Like the first thing I thought, well, I'll take the GRE and see how that goes. And then once I took the GRE, I was like, well, I may as well apply to some schools and see how that goes. And so that was it. And then once I got in the program, I was like, this was the perfect decision. Like this was just where I was meant to be. And now it's been 10 years that I've been out of grad school. Yeah. So it was a good decision. But yeah, I wasn't somebody who knew from the time I was three that I wanted to be a librarian. I guess I didn't really know what was involved in being a librarian. And then once I started looking into it, I was like, well, all these traits really fit me. Like I really like research and I really like answering questions. And I could sort of have a natural curiosity to find things out if somebody throws out like a question or a fact. Yeah. Like I want to look into it. And then, of course, I love books and reading and I like computer stuff. You know, so it just all sort of fit at the time that I was looking. I was like, these are all things that they're promoting as librarian tasks, features of a good librarian. So yeah, it worked out for me.
Perfect. I'm glad it did.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, so let's get into some details of books. What is a book you feel guilty that you've never read?
The Diary of Anne Frank.
Really?
I've never read The Diary of Anne Frank.
Wow.
I know. I think it was one of those that I sort of in that gap between middle school and high school that I hadn't read in middle school. And by the time I got to high school, they had already done it. And so I keep thinking I need to read it. I mean, how have I never read The Diary of Anne Frank?
Right,
it's shocking, I realize, but I've never read it.
Okay. Do you have other gaps in your reading knowledge? I guess we kind of talked about that.
Yeah, definitely. There are a lot of classics that I've just never read. In fact, we just did Brave New World in my book club last month, and I had never read that before. So yeah, there are definitely gaps. And a lot of, like, in that college, when I was in college, there are books that came out that are well regarded that I've never read. Like Snow Falling on Cedars comes to mind, and Captain Corelli's Mandolin. Certain books that were in the public knowledge, like people talking about, lots of book clubs read things like that that I've never read because it was just a time that I wasn't reading a whole lot of books that would have been in the bookstore. So there are books like that that I always think, oh, I need to go back and read that. And then again, going back to romance, there are books that are kind of classics of the romance genre that I've never read that I always think, oh, I should read those.
Right.
Because they're kind of the standard.
Yeah. Have you ever gotten obsessed with an author or wanted to read everything that they've written? Do you have anyone that you've read everything you've written?
So Rainbow Rowell, you've got to mention Rainbow Rowell. Read everything she's written.
Did you see that she liked our
tweet? Yes, she liked our tweet. That was so exciting. So Sarah Dessen, who I've read everything she's written. Sarah McLean, who is a romance author, I've read everything she's written. And I'm trying to think if there are other, I'm sure there are. Margaret Atwood, I'm working my way through hers. She's hit or miss for me, but I've compelled by her writing enough to keep going. So I have about three more books than hers.
Do you ever go to book signings or?
No, although I did accost Sarah Czar at the ALA conference one time because she's a young adult author who I think is fabulous. And I was waiting in line for a book signing for her. And I was the first in line because I was trying to get to a panel. So I was trying to get the signing done before I went to the panel. And so when she showed up, I was the only one there. And so I was like, I love you. You're amazing. That was kind of embarrassing. But that's really, we don't really have that many events around here to go to, sadly, because I would love to do some of that. Like, I've enjoyed any time I've been able to go to a reading or anything like that, the times that I've been, but I haven't done, I'm just trying to think. I've done a lot of young adult authors, their full catalog of books. John Green, I just thought of, and Morgan Matson is one I really like. I've read. So yeah, there are a lot of authors I'm sort of a completist.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have any dirty little reading secrets?
Oh, yes. So I never read chapter titles. I never read if they're like a poem or lyrics of a song in the text. I never read those. I just skip right over those.
So it might have the key to the story.
It could. I'm just not reading it. I don't know why. It's just my eyes skip right over it. Yeah. Often if it's in italics, like if it's big blocks of text in italics, for some reason, I just skip over it. Or if there's like a quote at the beginning of a chapter, I usually skip over that. I don't know why. That's my dirty little
I think that when you, if you don't know what the chapter is going to be about, that's
it's relevant.
Meaningless.
Yeah.
So you have to go back and read it again and think, oh, well, that's what that meant.
And
sometimes I think it can sort of give you an idea of what to expect. Yeah. But I think I probably do kind of the same thing. Yeah. I just hadn't articulated it.
Yeah, I just always skip over this. So that's my reading secrets.
Have you ever had a book surprise you?
I can't think of a particular book, but I've definitely had genres surprise me or authors surprise me. Like, I'd never read Stephen King because I always had it in my head that he was scary and horror, and I don't really do horror because I'm sure I've mentioned this before. I'm hugely a scaredy cat. Like, I can't do those sorts of things. But then I read 11/22/63, which is about the Kennedy assassination. And it was so good. Mm-hmm. And I totally got why people are obsessed with it. Like, why they're completists for Stephen King that read whatever he writes as soon as it comes out. Because he's such a good storyteller. Like, it was such a good story. So that book really surprised me. I've definitely been surprised by when I have read genres that I haven't thought. Like, I didn't ever think I was really a fantasy reader or a sci-fi reader at all. But then there have been books that have been recommended to me or I've seen good reviews of, so I decide to give them a try. And I'm surprised by how much I like them. Something like The Hunger Games. When I read The Hunger Games, that was when I first really started getting into reading a lot of teen books. And I wasn't reading the dystopians and I wasn't reading the fantasy because I was really sticking more to realistic fiction. And now it sounds silly to say, oh, The Hunger Games surprised me, but it really surprised me how much I liked it and how into it I was for something that when I read the description, I was like, oh, I'm not so sure about this. Kids killing other kids. And then I was like, this is just gripping. It is so good. Obviously, the world agreed with me. But at the time, it wasn't the thing that it eventually became. Yeah. And so that books like that went outside of my genre preferences or outside of my usual reading preferences, I've been surprised. Or I always say I'm not really a nonfiction reader, mm-hmm. but then sometimes in my book club, they choose nonfiction books. And then those have surprised me a lot of how much I've liked those books, like Unbroken mm-hmm. or The Boys in the Boat we mm-hmm. just did not too long ago, which I thought was really good. So I'm always, I should have learned by now not to be surprised by it. But instead, I'm consistently surprised when I read something that I think, oh, I might not like this. And then, mm-hmm. and then it turns out I do.
Has any book stayed with you or influenced you in your life? Do you think that you have something you sort of go back to all the time?
Yes. There's a book recently called Tiny Beautiful Things by Cheryl Strayed, who's mm-hmm. the author of Wild. And it is a collection of advice columns that she wrote for a website called The Rumpus. And at the time, she was an anonymous advice columnist. Nobody knew who she was. And she is very forthright. She's very mm-hmm. honest, and she would add a lot of her own experiences in the answers. And she's also very compassionate. And that all came through. They put together a collection of these answers into a book, basically, of essays that she wrote. And it really, I've given it to a lot of people I know and recommended it to a lot of people I know, specifically women, about going after what you want in life. Mm-hmm. And sometimes being scared of something is just enough reason to do something about it, you know, make a change. And so that really stuck with me. I was just, I read that maybe 3 or 4 years ago. So it's a relatively recent one in my life, but that was a huge game changer. I mean, that was, I think it came into my life at a time that was very appropriate. Right. You know, yeah. I didn't realize that when I picked it up, but she's a very interesting person. And I had read Wild and thought it was all right. Like, I wasn't as big of a fan as I became after I read Tiny mm-hmm. Beautiful Things, because it's sort of part memoir, part advice column, part self-help book. Again, being surprised, that doesn't really sound like something I would enjoy, but I thoroughly yeah. loved that book.
Cool. That's very cool. What book are you afraid to read?
It's so trite. War and Peace.
It's the biggest of all the books, though.
It's the biggest of all the books that should be very appealing to me. But all those Russian names, man. I don't know. And the war part. I don't know.
You're okay with the peace part?
I'm okay with the peace part. I'm not okay with the war part. So yeah, never read that one.
Do you think you'll ever read it?
Maybe someday.
Yeah.
Maybe. That could be a project at one point.
Yeah.
I've read other people do it sort of over the summer or something mm-hmm. where they'll read a certain number of pages a week or a certain number of chapters and intersperse it with other books. And that's worked for them. My fear with doing that is that I won't ever get back to the War and Peace if mm-hmm. I start reading other things better. And I might forget what's happened if I take too long of a break.
Right.
So I'll probably do it eventually. I don't know.
So how do you decide what to read and what format do you read in?
I decide. So this is actually the first year that I have given myself no sort of direction on what I'm going to read. Usually I have goals of trying mm-hmm. to read certain types of books or certain number of books and things. And this year I was like, nope, not doing it. I'm just going to read whatever I want to read, whatever sounds interesting in the moment. So I read a lot of book reviews. I'm on Goodreads, mm-hmm. as we've mentioned. And so I see a lot of books pop up there. You know, friends recommend books. I listen to a lot of book podcasts. So mm-hmm. I'm always hearing about new books. And so it's sort of whatever strikes me as interesting. If I have an author that I love that's coming out with a book, that gets pushed to the top of the list. And then my book club, I have two book clubs that I run at the library. Mm-hmm. And so there are two books a month that I'm reading for that. I still like paper mm-hmm. books the best, particularly like trade paperback. I mm-hmm. like the size and the feel of trade paperbacks better than hardbacks. I do read on an e-reader. I read on a Kindle. I get a lot of advanced copies electronically instead of in paper format. Mm-hmm. And so I use my Kindle mostly for those. I don't typically buy books on the Kindle, but a lot of the advanced copies I read will be on the Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm probably like 75% paper, 25% e-reading right now.
Do you?
And audiobooks, of course.
Right.
Which I didn't factor in as 25%, but I do a lot of audiobooks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you reread anything?
I do occasionally. For the book club, often I've already read, or not all often, I shouldn't say that, but sometimes if I've already read the book, I do reread it for the book club
mm-hmm.
Just so I can know the details. And then if I'm going to reread, lots of times I try to change format.
Oh,
so if
smart.
I had read it as a physical book before, I try to listen to it as an audiobook the second time.
Uh-huh.
Or if it's a book I really love, I'll reread it. This summer I did a Sarah Dessen reread mm-hmm. because I just hadn't read a lot of her books since the first time around. I read them 10 years ago, when they came out. And so I did reread those. But I'm not a huge rereader just because there are so many books out there I want to read
yeah.
that it's hard to fit in the the rereading time of feeling like it's taking away from another book that I would want to read. Yeah. It's a new book. But I do reread occasionally.
Yeah. So just to finish up, what are a couple of books that are on your to-be-read list you're looking forward to?
There are like a million.
I know.
If you look at my Goodreads to-read list, it is ridiculous. There's a new Jennifer Weiner book out that mm-hmm. I have on hold at the library. There's a book called The Admissions by Meg Mitchell Moore that looked interesting about the college admissions process in a family. So I have that on my to-read list. What else? New Mindy Kaling books comes out next week. I'm looking forward to that. New Sarah McLean book coming out in December, I think. I'm looking forward to that. So I have a ridiculous number.
Yeah. So it sounds like you usually go for what's coming out instead of
filling
in blanks.
I do both. Like there's an author that I'm going to be talking about on the podcast. So I'm not going to mention it right now, but I read one of her books and now have just sort of powered through. Mm-hmm. She had 6 or 7 books and I've just read all of them pretty much in the past month or two. So I go back and forth. Again, this year I sort of, in previous years, I was more focused on upcoming books because I just always felt like I had to stay up to date. Mm-hmm. And especially people are constantly asking at the library, what have you read recently? What's good? You know, what should I read? And so I always felt like I had to stay up to date. And this year I've let go of that a little bit and just read, again, what sounds interesting to me. It's what's coming across my vision like on the internet, in the library. And so it's really a mixture of, I know I just mentioned all front list books that are coming out is on my to read list, but I'm sure there are plenty of other books that have been published previously.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks for talking about your reading life.
Fun.
It's super fun to hear this kind of stuff and learn new things about someone. And it just makes me want to read everything that you've recommended.
I know. Well, I'm mentioning some of those books that I have read or had skipped reading. I'm like, oh gosh, I should really read that. Or I should read that again. Maybe I should go back and read The Westing Game. I loved that book. I'm sure I would be horrified if I went back and read like The Babysitter's Club or Sweet Valley High, which you have never read the Sweet Valley High books.
I haven't. Yeah, that'd be a fun summer project.
Yes.
A terrible, terrible summer project that I would have such a good time doing.
So fun. All right. We will be right back after this brief break with what we're reading this week. So what are you reading this weekend?
Okay. I am reading a book for my book club, and I run a mystery book club, so I read a lot of mysteries. And this month we're reading a book called The Cutting Season by Attica Locke. This came out in 2012, I think. It's a fairly recent book. It takes place on a Louisiana plantation called Bellevue, and this plantation has been held by the Clancy family since the Civil War. And the family no longer lives there. They still own it, but they live in the city. I can't remember which. I think Baton Rouge. And they just rent out the property for events and weddings and field trips and things like that. So they have a property manager named Karen Gray, and she's the main character of the book. And she is a woman who grew up there on the plantation as the daughter of the family's cook. She and her ancestors, I think, were also slaves on the plantation. So her family has been here for generations. And she has this backstory that you don't really get at the beginning. You just know that she's living on the plantation and kind of doesn't seem very happy about it. But you know from the beginning that she has a daughter, but the father isn't around. You know that she went to law school, but she isn't a lawyer. That she somehow had a falling out with her mother, who was the cook. And that she was away from the plantation for many, many years and then has come back to live there in the past couple of years. So one of the things I really liked about the book is how it sort of unfolds all this information, and you just know these basic facts, but you don't really know how they all fit together, how she came to this point in her life. So the mystery takes place on an October morning. Karen and her staff are doing the regular property check around, just checking to make sure everything is okay. And they find a body of a Hispanic woman who's been murdered. And they find out through the investigation that she was a migrant worker at there's a corporate sugarcane farm that's next door to this plantation, and that she was working there. So it sort of is setting itself up to be kind of an amateur detective that's looking into this, but that's not really the case. Karen doesn't really have any interest in solving this herself, but the case keeps intersecting with her personal life in certain ways. And so she keeps being drawn into it and finding out information that she then kind of has to decide what she's going to do with it as she realizes, oh, this is the person I thought I trusted, I can no longer trust. So there's all kinds of questions that come up with that. And it's kind of cool because it's like a locked room mystery, but done in a different way than I've seen before, because the plantation is closed at night and they lock all the entrances and it has this huge fence around it. So there's really no way for this woman to have come onto the property. So they know that something bad was happening. So, and I think that there's also supposed to be something about a slave that was murdered after the Civil War. I haven't gotten to that part of the story. It said in the description that happens, but I don't know anything about that yet. So there's two mysteries that are going on. It has a really good atmosphere. It has this, it's October, so it's kind of starting to become fall in the South and things are getting crisp and a little spooky. And yeah, I like it too. And it's, of course, a plantation, so there's live oaks with Spanish moss, and that always feels mysterious. And there's kind of these ghostly moments where Karen is walking through the property and hears things that don't seem to fit with the time frame that she's working in. So, like, slave songs are being sung that she can't figure out where they're coming from. So it just has a really, really fun atmosphere. But it's kind of a... It sort of has a claustrophobic feeling, but I've really enjoyed it so far. It takes on some things that are a little bit more weighty, like the legacy of slavery in the South and migrant workers, and it's doing a lot, but I think she does it well.
Okay. That sounds really good.
Yeah.
She's one, going back to my to-read list, she's an author I've not read yet. It's a she, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. She's on my list of books to read,
yeah,
authors to try.
I also just found out that she's a writer on the show Empire, which I thought was of fascinating.
That's
fascinating.
All right, so this week I'm reading a book that I'm not very far into called In the Unlikely Event by Judy Blume. It is set in 1951 and 1952 in Elizabeth, New Jersey, where there were three plane crashes during that winter in, I think it's about 58 days. And this is true. There were actually three plane crashes during that time. And it was when Judy Blume was a teenager. So she's drawing on her real life for this book. And it touches on a bunch of different perspectives of people in the story. So there are the people that live in the town and then the passengers on the plane. And it mainly centers around a young girl named Mary, who is a teenager as these events are happening. And the story is bookended by her return to Elizabeth in 1987. And she's reflecting on the events of that winter. And so it's both a coming of age story for her and a story about how disasters can shape a person and how these tragedies and their reactions to them reveal that what seems like a quiet kind of small town suburb, I should say, it reveals some of the underlying things that are going on and some secrets that are held. So it's interesting. It's a good combination of those two things. And Judy Blume, like I said, you know, I read her when I was younger. She's so great at capturing what it feels like to be growing up. And a lot of sort of the daily things that happen, and this, it was especially interesting to me, or is especially interesting to me, the glimpses into daily life in the 50s, mm-hmm. and a lot of the things she throws in kind of go over my head because they're not references I know, but I'm sure that they are things that actually happened in the 50s. So that's fun. I found it a little bit confusing at the beginning because there are so many characters and she bounces back and forth between their perspectives. But as the story goes on, and like I said, I'm not that far into it, but as the story goes on, it does become clear how people are connected, and it's clearer who each person is, and they become distinct people instead of just this sort of back and forth between all of them. So it's fun. It's easy to read and it's engaging, and I'm enjoying it so far.
Yeah, I know it's a very popular book. Yeah, lots and lots of holds.
I've been on hold for it for quite a while at the library. So it's great. And, you know, it's fun that she's typically thought of as a children's and young adult author. And here she is writing a story for adults that's so popular, and she's in like her 70s or 80s, I think, at this point.
Yeah. I don't know exactly, but yeah, it's cool to see someone that's
fun.
Had a long career.
Yeah,
a long career.
All right, so that's it for us this week. We're not going to do a book recap other than, let's say, what we read this week.
Oh, so my book this week that I was reading was The Cutting Season by Attica Locke.
And mine was In the Unlikely Event by Judy Blume. If you want to get in touch with us to give us feedback or a suggestion on a topic you'd like us to discuss, you can email us at wellreadpod@gmail.com or on Twitter at wellreadpodcast. Please rate and review us on iTunes or your other podcast provider of choice. Our podcast is engineered by Adam Farver. Our theme music is Kitten by Poddington Bear. We keep our show notes at BeaufortCountyLibrary.org/wellread, where you can find a listing of every book we talked about in this episode. If you'd like a book recommendation list tailored specifically for you, please go to BeaufortCountyLibrary.org/mynextbook and take a brief survey on what type of books you like. You will need a BCL library card in order to use the service. Thank you all for listening, and happy reading!